Good afternoon. You're listening to the Health Justice Radio Collective on McMaster's CFMU 93.3. When our bodies get sick, we know just what to do. We see our doctor or healthcare provider right away, tell them what's wrong, and receive treatment. No one judges us or discriminates against us for having diabetes or high blood pressure. But what about when our brains get sick? For whatever reason, mental illness has developed a negative connotation in our society, which prevents many people from seeking and receiving care. Today, we'll try to dispel some of these myths and stigmas about mental illness.
You're listening to Health Justice Radio Collective on CFMU 93.3.
We have with us today Dr. Joseph Ferenz, the Chief of Psychiatry at St. Joseph's Healthcare in Hamilton. He's an Associate Clinical Professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Neurosciences at McMaster University. His clinical work focuses on psychotic disorders and forensic psychiatry. Welcome to the show, Dr. Ferenz, and thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be here.
It's great. Thanks. So I'd like to start by talking a little bit about psychiatry in general and how we kind of define what mental illness is and what are the factors that might contribute to someone developing a mental illness.
Well, let me start by just saying that psychiatry is a branch of medicine that deals with individuals who are suffering with a variety of mental disorders. And those mental disorders can range from relatively minor issues to very, very severe and impairing ones. So there's quite a spectrum. In terms of what mental illness is, it's usually a disturbance of thought or feeling or behavior such that it influences your ability to function in the world in some meaningful fashion. It may cause you some degree of distress for which you seek some kind of assistance. It can cause you disability. It may make it difficult for an individual to participate in educational or vocational activities. And all of these things can be a result of something else, but they are often also a result of mental illness. And when they are a result of mental illness, that's when they contribute to the definition of it. So just being, for example, just having difficulty with work or having difficulty with how you're feeling on any given day doesn't necessarily make it a mental illness. Mm-hmm. However, if it's consistently there and it's causing you a great deal of distress over a period of time, or it's making it difficult for you to do your day-to-day activities, and you want to seek help for it or something to that effect, I think then it begins to shade into the realm of psychiatry.
Okay. So it's really when it's starting to impair someone's life significantly is...
Usually someone's life or the lives of people around them. And let me clarify that a little bit, because sometimes individuals who are suffering with mental illnesses, particularly serious ones, they don't believe they have an illness. And so just asking whether the person wants help or whether they feel they have a problem isn't quite the whole story.
Right.
If an individual is in some fashion impaired or disorganized due to some serious illness, in a fashion that makes them, say, dangerous to themselves or dangerous to someone else, or makes it impossible for them to look after themselves properly, even though they think they're doing fine, they may not be, then under those circumstances, Those kinds of factors have to be taken into consideration in defining whether an individual does or doesn't have an illness.
Okay.
Also, things like just behaviors that are significantly outside the norm may also be features of illness, but not necessarily. So just because a person is different or, you know, lies outside of the normal distribution on some feature does not necessarily mean they're ill, mm-hmm. but often people who are ill do have those features. Mm-hmm. So when we define mental illness, it's trying to take all of those kinds of things into consideration and looking at the whole picture.
Okay, okay. And I guess another factor would be, trying to distinguish if this person, if what they're feeling and how they're acting can be explained by some other medical illness, because I know that mm-hmm. a lot of, say, the symptoms might be due to drugs that someone's taking. So is that also a factor?
Well, Allison, that's a good point. It's not so much a factor in whether the person is suffering with an illness, because if they have certain features, they probably mm-hmm. are suffering with an illness. What causes it will to some extent define what type of illness it is. So, for example, there are some illnesses which may result in significant distortions in people's thinking. For the sake of discussion, let's say a person is hallucinating,
okay.
or they have some marked disorganization in their thinking, or they have paranoid ideas, delusional ideas that people are persecuting them. That can be due to a lot of different things. It can be due mm-hmm. to acute intoxication with substances. It can be due to serious mental illness proper, such as schizophrenia or bipolar disorder in some cases. It can be due to medical illness, like, for example, thyroid disorders or disorders of glucose metabolism, such as diabetes mm-hmm. or vitamin B12 deficiencies,
right.
and many, many different kinds of physical problems can actually manifest as psychiatric presentations,
mm-hmm.
such as depression or mania or psychosis
yeah.
or disordered or dysfunctional cognition or
yeah.
thinking ability, which was predisposed
mm-hmm.
to initial episodes
mm-hmm.
as well.
Okay, next I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the factors that may contribute to someone developing a mental illness. So starting from early in life, any stressful events, anything
mm-hmm.
that might contribute.
Well, first let me say that I don't want to give the impression that we have a clear understanding of all the specific causes and manifestations of mental illness. We're every year we understand a little bit more about these things, but we have to be humble in our estimation of explanations
mm-hmm.
because the truth is the brain is the most complicated organ we
yeah,
know
of
and we really have pretty basic understanding of how it works.
Mm-hmm.
That having been said, over the course of time we've learned a lot, and we've learned about what some of the significant factors are that in some instances contribute to the development of mental illness. And certainly one of those factors is the individual's genetic predisposition.
Mm-hmm.
We know that certain types of illnesses may be to some extent predisposed to by genetic factors. Individuals who have family backgrounds that contain a lot of examples of certain kinds of problems are more likely statistically to have those kinds of problems.
Okay.
In some instances, it can be a relatively small predisposition. In other cases, it can be quite significant. So genetic predisposition is a factor. It's
okay.
not the whole story by any stretch of the imagination,
yeah.
but it is a predisposition. The other thing that is a predisposing factor is certainly stress. We know that certain types of illnesses manifest under circumstances of stress. From my personal experience, I can tell you that individuals who suffer with chronic illnesses such as schizophrenia may become unwell, even
mm-hmm.
though they're continuing to take their medication, if they're under significant psychosocial stressors.
Okay.
And there's no doubt in my mind that stress contributes, in some cases where an individual is predisposed,
mm-hmm.
to initial episodes
mm-hmm.
as well. I'm sorry about the phone. So again, stress isn't the entire story by any means, but we do know that in certain types of illnesses, depression, for example, is another example where individuals were suffering significant stress. And by stress, I mean a response of the body to non-specific events of a variety of types. It can be physical stress, such as illness. It can be psychological stress, such as worrying about exams, for example, or about family issues, any of a number of different things. Even sleep loss can be a significant stressor and can be a predisposition factor for illnesses.
Okay.
So a lot of different kinds of changes in the environment, if they are lengthy or severe or traumatic, for example, can predispose individuals, again, to developing problems. You're probably aware that individuals in circumstances such as motor vehicle accidents or wars and so forth are very definitely predisposed to developing certain kinds of problems. Not everybody, but certain individuals will be more likely to develop symptoms of things like post-traumatic stress disorder. So stress is definitely another factor.
Okay.
There are lots of other factors. I'm not sure how much detail you want to go into, but there are factors such as physical health, which are important. And I can tell you with some degree of confidence that substance abuse is a significant factor in the development of a variety of different kinds of illnesses.
Right.
Alcohol abuse is not just a problem unto itself. It also predisposes individuals to other kinds of problems which are related to it. For example, depression. We find a very high coincidence of depression in alcohol and substance abuse. We find, for example, the use of certain types of substances predispose individuals to the development of psychotic disorders, for example. The use of amphetamines and, in fact, cannabis predisposes individuals who have that genetic loading to developing much more serious mental illnesses. Some people seem to be able to be fortunate and avoid that, and others not so much, and they will develop these illnesses. There's more and more information accumulating that something that we think is relatively some of us think is relatively benign, such as the use of cannabis. For a small percentage of the population, and depending on the literature you read, it's 5 to 10%, is actually predisposing the person to a psychotic disorder, and in some cases to chronic recurrent psychotic disorder. So it's not benign. And if anyone uses those kinds of substances, they want to be, you know, cognizant of the potential downside and be very, very careful about that. So it's not benign. It's very significant. And I can tell you from my own clinical work, again, that people who have these illnesses who use substances, their illness, the course of their illness is much worse and they have more frequent relapses.
Okay, that's very interesting. Probably something a lot of people didn't know about.
The literature is there, and, and I think people should, you know, educate themselves about it so that they can make good choices.
Now, I think one of the common misconceptions about mental illness in our society is that some people may think that it's the person's own fault of, for some reason, that they're acting this way or feeling these feelings. And I think what we just discussed proves that that's not the case at all, and it's really could happen to anyone, and it's a combination of so many different factors.
I think we're learning more and more that simplistic explanations such as, you know, that it's a personal weakness or that it's how some individual family member treated you at some remote time in your past alone is an inadequate explanation by a long shot.
And I think that those understandings are definitely increasing recently. But do you think that there's still a strong stigma that exists in our society now against mental illness?
I think it's improving, but I absolutely still think we've got a lot of work to do in this regard. First of all, let me say stigma is one of those words that is used so much it starts to lose its meaning.
Okay.
What we're talking about with stigma, I think, is discrimination, shame, embarrassment associated with having certain kinds of illnesses and not others. Why is it that a person can have, I don't know, an orthopedic injury, and not be ashamed or right. not feel badly about sharing that information. But if someone has depression or an anxiety disorder, often they're really reluctant to share that information because they're embarrassed about it, because their friends or their family may not want to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain element of social embarrassment that still exists that's very unfortunate, and
mm-hmm.
we're working very, very hard to overcome.
Mm-hmm.
We have an anti-stigma campaign going on in our institution, for example.
Okay.
It's a very high priority for us to bring these things out as being illnesses, not weaknesses,
mm-hmm.
and that people don't have a choice in this. They suffer with this through no fault of their own, and that there are treatments, and
mm-hmm.
that people have the right to these treatments, and they have a right to a life of dignity and love and all the things that
mm-hmm.
everyone wants.
Yeah.
And so I think stigmatization is one of those things that really is a significant obstacle to people. Imagine, it's already hard enough to be dealing with this kind of thing in and of itself without on top of it having to deal with, you know, feeling like, people don't want to talk about it, or I don't want to hear about that, or, you know, one of the things that's very common that people describe is when they become unwell, some of their friends and family drift away from
mm-hmm.
them. And just at the time when you need more support, you start losing support.
Yeah.
And so it's a very, very difficult part of this. It's a contributing factor to making it all that much more difficult
mm-hmm.
to overcome some of these problems. Fortunately, as you can see from media events all around you,
mm-hmm.
I think all the time, this has been now finally identified as a huge issue.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, a lot of people in high-profile places with significant influence are
uh-huh.
starting to come out in the media and acknowledge that they themselves have had illnesses. I can, I'm really pleased when I see certain, you know, actors or political figures or, you know, others come out and say, I suffered with depression, or I suffer with
mm-hmm.
obsessive compulsive disorder,
mm-hmm.
or I had an episode of this illness or that, and I got over it, and I just want everyone to know that it's a problem, it's an illness, it can be treated, you
shouldn't
can get
be
on
embarrassed
with
it.
That's
talk
right.
about it.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's really important, and we're working hard to overcome it, but we still got a long way to go about
mm-hmm.
that. Yeah.
Definitely. And I've noticed that some institutions seem to be, like you said, kind of focusing more on community integration and providing support. Is anything like that happening in Hamilton?
Well, yes, it is. I mean, I you may have noticed across from Mohawk, there's a rather large psychiatric facility going up, but it's not just a psychiatric
mm-hmm.
facility. When the teams involved in designing that building, which is going to be called the Juravinsky Center for Integrated Healthcare, were designing that, it was with a very specific idea in mind, and that is it needs to be open to the community. It needs to provide services that serve people from a variety of walks of life in the community, and not just mental health services,
mm-hmm.
but things like diagnostic imaging services, medical clinics of various kinds, and shopping. I mean, there will be a lot of different things that people can kind of come into the building, which you'll notice when you see it. It's going to be very open, very bright,
mm-hmm.
lots of glass, lots of warmth, and I think it'll be a very pleasant environment
mm-hmm.
not only to be treated in, but also to visit people in and spend a little bit of time in. And the intention behind that was, again, to kind of lift the veil from
mm-hmm.
the sort of stigmatizing aspect of mental illness and open the facility out to
mm-hmm.
the community. So that's very much part of what we've incorporated into the design of the new facility there.
That sounds like it's going to be a wonderful treatment.
We certainly
facility.
Believe it is.
Yeah.
We really do.
Okay. That's great. So that's still under construction.
It is. It'll be completed, and we're planning on moving in February of 2014.
Okay. And until that is open and available for patients, what kind of services are available in Hamilton for people suffering from mental illness? So whether it be community programs at St. Joe's?
St. Joe's has St. Joseph's Healthcare has a large number of of programs that are devoted to the treatment of various mental illnesses. We have a comprehensive sort of spectrum of services ranging from emergency psychiatry at the St. Joseph's ER, which is a 7-day-a-week, 24-hour-a-day service for acute mental illnesses.
Okay.
People often come in through the emergency department or can be referred directly by their family physicians for psychiatric assessment there in an emergency. We have a comprehensive system of care that ranges from acute inpatient services through outpatient services, clinics, both here at the Fontbonne at Charlton Street site, as well as the site at the St. Joseph's Ambulatory Care Center on King Street. In addition to that, the St. Joseph's Healthcare was also amalgamated with the what used to be called the Hamilton Psychiatric Hospital.
Okay.
And that's where we are right now at the West 5th campus of St. Joseph's, because it's all one hospital now. Mm-hmm. And that site is primarily, although we have some acute services here, we have a relatively small number of acute inpatient beds here. Primary function of this organization is called tertiary care or specialized care for individuals who, for whatever reason, require a higher degree of specialization for a specific type of illness, such as schizophrenia or mood disorder or dementia or any of a number of others.
Okay.
So we have it's an entire spectrum of care, both inpatient and outpatient, ranging from the emergency department all the way through to outpatient services such as ACT teams. I don't know if you've heard the term ACT team, but it's an assertive community treatment team, where individuals who have very high level of need are treated on a very intense basis, where they may have staff visiting them on a daily basis in their own home.
So they stay in their home, and then they have...
Well, they in most cases will be staying in their own home environment.
Okay.
And whether that's with family or in a group home setting or so forth, and there they will often, sometimes they'll come in for appointments, but sometimes ACT team members will go out and visit them and just ensure that they're continuing to do well in a variety of different ways and facilitate the access to a variety of different kinds of programs, such as vocational, recreational programs, school, and various things, in addition to making sure that the treatments are going well, whatever those treatments happen to be, whether it's medication or therapy. So, you know, it's quite a spectrum of care here at St. Joe's. I also want to add that it's not just St. Joe's providing care in Hamilton. There are other types of programs. There are community programs which provide case management services, for example, like the Canadian Mental Health Association, the Hamilton Program for Schizophrenia, the Wellington Psychiatric Outreach Program, and Public Health also provides some psychiatric care. So there are other community agencies that provide psychiatric care as well.
Okay, so it sounds like there's, you know, tons of resources out there.
I would say there are a lot of resources, but I would have to say that many of those research sources are stretched. I mean, there's a lot of need, too.
Of course.
And I think that we're always working hard to make sure that the services match the number of people who require them and that the services that people are getting are appropriate to their level of need.
Yeah, I think one of the things that surprised me most learning about these topics is, you know, the number of people that are suffering from mental illness. It's just...
Depending on the statistics you read, I mean, some people say it's as high as 1 in 4 individuals will suffer with a significant mental health problem at some point in their lives. And I have to say, I feel quite strongly that almost everyone has been touched in some significant way by mental illness, whether it's themselves or a loved one or a close friend. I think most of us have had some exposure to this kind of thing. If we haven't now, we are likely to at some point. So it's something that's important for everyone to be aware of and to, you know, have a sort of a personal strategy or a personal understanding of so that they can, if they haven't already had to, so they can think about how they might deal with it when and if it were to happen somewhere in their sphere of, you know, social interactions or with themselves. So I think it's good to be aware of it, even if it hasn't directly touched you. I think it's really good to be aware of the kinds of things that happen to people, the kinds of things that contribute to it, and the kinds of things that can happen to help ameliorate it as well. And I think what you're doing here is a good example of that.
Good. So, yeah, just spreading knowledge and spreading awareness about
these
kinds of things.
I think so.
Okay. So we're almost out of time, but just to finish up, if we can maybe tell some of our listeners, if they'd like to learn more, like you said, increase their awareness about the different kinds of mental illnesses, in increasing knowledge so that we can try and work away at that stigma that might exist.
Mm-hmm.
What are some maybe good resources that are out there?
Well, there are a number of societies that are dedicated to providing education and support. You can usually access them pretty easily on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be a little bit careful. Some of the information on the internet is
right.
a bit suspect.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of these sort of provincial and national organizations can provide excellent information. Organizations such as the Canadian Mental Health Association has very good information. There are societies such as the Schizophrenia Society, which can provide excellent information on some of the more serious illnesses. Almost all of the more serious illnesses have societies and groups that are focused on providing support and education
mm-hmm.
around these issues. There are a number of different sources of information. If an individual is concerned, I would say that the first place to start is to touch base with their family physician
right.
and have a frank discussion about some of the issues or problems that
mm-hmm.
they're running into. And that's always a good place to start for your health in general and for
yeah,
this in particular.
Of course. And not to be nervous to bring up these subjects.
Absolutely not. I think that the earlier that you can understand what's happening and get help for it, the better the long-term outcome is going to be with
mm-hmm.
all of these things.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's great advice. So we're out of time, but thank you so much, Dr. Ferenz.
Certainly been my pleasure. Thank
we
you
We appreciate
much,
the discussion. Thank you.
You're welcome.
For more information about mental health, you can visit the Canadian Mental Health Association website at www.cmha.ca.